Peace and love. Peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, here's the host of Good Things Radio, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode number 123. My name is Brooke Taylor, and this is a part two of the Holy Land Pilgrimage recap. Thank you so much for listening to part one of the show. This is the continuation. So in this episode, getting locked inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, how did that happen and why? For me, it was the climax and really most of the conclusion of the trip to Israel. So we'll go over that. Also, the Choose Joy devotional. It is out of my heart and now into many of your hands. A very, very grateful praise report about that. And if you've not ordered your 52-week devotional, right now is actually the perfect pocket of time to get it. Depending on when you hear this, we still do have some time for Christmas delivery, but I've been hearing that a lot. A lot of families with blended faiths, immediate extended families, not everyone is the same denomination, but this book bridges that. It appeals to everyone. So it's been, for me, one of the most exciting aspects is just the feedback as we are hearing people are giving these books for Christmas gifts. Also, we're going to have a recap of the Choose Joy Luncheon, a big event in our neck of the woods. Fantastic speakers, our Arise team really working hard to get this together. And I'll tell you a little bit about how that went and so much more. So where we left off on the last episode was the Holy Land, entering into the religion, the politics of the people, and not just in Israel, but the geopolitical nature of that part of the world, and my own experiences as a pilgrim, just trying to take it all in and feeling very overwhelmed. And it really made me want to go back and study again the Crusades, because the consequences of the Crusades are very real and very evident there. I mean, it's not like some legendary mythical thing. It really happened, and the implications remain to this day. For instance, the Upper Room, the Cenacle, this is one of the most important places in Christendom. This is according to tradition where the apostles stayed when they were in Jerusalem. It's where the Last Supper took place. It's where Jesus washed the disciples' feet. And it represents so much, of course, the Holy Spirit, the descent of the Holy Spirit. But it's also important to Jews and Muslims. Muslims consider it to be a mosque. The Israelis consider the lower level to be the tomb of David. And it has belonged to the Israelis since 1948. So in most of these places, thanks be to God, the Franciscans are kind of running the show until you can go in. We had Mass, for instance, in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, but you cannot have Mass in the Upper Room or in that area. Now, I think if I remember right, again, this is hard. This is a huge pilgrimage, and I'm just saying this off the top of my head, but I think that Pope John Paul II was permitted. There's been a few instances where I think Pope Francis in the last few years where he was able to celebrate Mass in that area. But it just is really interesting because even the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, that is kind of shared real estate, if you will, between the Orthodox and the Copts and the Armenians and the Roman Catholic Christians. And so they have to share. And that kind of takes me to the most unbelievable climax of the entire trip for me personally. And it's hard because I'm skipping over so much, but I want to just make sure that I share this because it is foremost on my heart and the spotlight as I look back on the trip that stands out above all else. And that was having the opportunity to be locked inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre for 9 hours straight overnight and be able to pray. And it might sound weird. I shared this with a friend of mine and she said, okay, you're nuts. I would never do that. You're in the Middle East. You're locked in a church. But I know, I said, just, it's not like that. What ended up happening is that Brother John Michael Paul was able to have a connection with the Franciscans there. And so he, and I guess every night they allow a certain amount of pilgrims. It's just a handful. It's not many. And so each, again, of those traditions, the Armenians, the Copts, the Orthodox, the Catholics can allow the Roman Catholics, they have a certain amount of people that they can select and let in. And as they lock the doors of the church, they are permitted to stay. But there are certain rules. You cannot sleep. You cannot speak in an audible, out loud way. And, or, you know, that's disruptive. And you can't sing. So you are only solely permitted to pray. And in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, it's a massive building with many things. I'm just going to kind of mention the highlights, and there are many things under one roof of this church. Most notable, though, would be Golgotha, the stone where Jesus Christ was crucified, the place of the skull where the cross stood on that rock. And then there is the stone of unction, which as you enter is probably one of the first things that you'll see, with the beautiful Orthodox lamps lining it where they laid Jesus after he died. And then you have kind of a church within a church, the resurrection, the tomb of Jesus where he rose again. There's also where St. Helena found the true cross. There's other small churches and a world of a story within those walls of the church. So when you go in there, normally you're thinking, okay, I'm going to have this out-of-body experience. It's going to be amazing. But the problem is it's usually really hectic and packed, and people are kind of pushing and you're shoulder to shoulder when you do get into the tomb. And I definitely found this at the site of the birth where we were at the Church of the Nativity, where you're able to reach into kind of this grotto area where there's this gold star. But you're doing so by sticking together with your group, only being able to be down there for a minute. Somebody's taking a picture. And so it's like not at all what you would think would be where you can contemplate the power of the ground you stand on. It's kind of almost an afterthought, and then you think about it later. You have to go right now. And so then to be able to be in the church where basically there's nobody else there, but in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, was an opportunity that I did not want to pass up. And we were told there was room for five of us. There would be five slots. Most everybody did not want to go. It's a long night. We have a packed trip. Everybody is exhausted. And so to know you're not going to be able to sleep at all is not for everybody. But I had talked to Brother John Michael Paul about this ahead of time, and so I had already kind of mentally prepared. But what happened is when we got into Jerusalem, there weren't any slots that night. So to make a long story short, the only time that was going to work was on our last day. And for me, that meant I wouldn't sleep, and then we would have a full day of going to, you know, all the last stops that we needed to do that day. And then at 11:30 at night, we were flying out and back to the United States. And our tour guide was very strongly discouraging it, basically telling me, you know, you are going to kill yourself and you're going to get sick. You're going to go home to your family. You're going to be exhausted. Now, knowing what I know already, that I don't sleep on an airplane, I thought, okay, this could either go one way or another. I could actually sleep and be so exhausted that I'll just pass out and just sleep on the plane, or I won't sleep and I will get sick. And I've got this event, this luncheon over the weekend, and a return to my family, and I'm going to be no good. But I also knew this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. This was really special. And so what would I do? What would you do? I called my husband. I said, I don't know what to do. Our tour guide said, don't do it. The other people who were going just said, you need to ask the Lord what you need to do. My husband said, isn't this trip enough? All that you've experienced, all that God's given you, isn't it enough as it is? You don't have to try to do this. You don't have to stay. Our tour guide said, God does not want extra credit. You don't need to do this. And so as he was talking, and I was tired, I thought, you know what? You're right. And so then I thought, I'm just going to walk with the group who is going, and I'm going to tell Brother John Michael Paul, I'm not going. And if you want to take my place, go ahead. So we met, and I told him, and he was so disappointed. And he said, you took someone's spot, and now you're not going to go. And that, I mean, when you have a monk really disappointed in you, I couldn't take it. So, but everybody else was prepared. They had their blankets, they had their food with their backpacks and, you know, their eye drops and anything that they might need, their water when you're going to be in there, you know, basically camped out for 9 hours all night. And I said to Brother John Michael Paul, well, why don't you go? And he said, no, 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 you have to mentally prepare. And I wanted you to go. So as I was walking with the group and feeling terrible and I didn't have anything with me if I wanted to stay, as we walked into the door of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, I heard in my spirit, I heard the Lord say, couldn't you keep watch with me for 1 hour? And that was it. Because it really did bubble up from what I would have just guessed was out of nowhere in my spirit. And so I really did take that to heart as a personal invitation. And I told my girlfriend, Lucia, one of the other pilgrims, she and her sister, Eileen, were going to be staying overnight. There was also a mom and her daughter, Rita, in Islay. Rita does not speak English, only Spanish. And they were the most unbelievably beautiful pair of ladies together. It was such a beautiful example of a godly mother and daughter relationship because Islay translated every single thing on this trip. And it wasn't annoying. No one got frustrated. She didn't get tired of doing it. It was just so beautiful. With every sermon, every stop that we were at, and every conversation. And it was really cool. So they were there together, Eileen and Lucia. And when I shared this with Lucia, she said, I have double of everything. She said, I have an extra blanket, an extra jacket. I have a meal and a half, anything that you might need. I've got journals. And I had my headphones and my music. And that was really all that I felt that I needed anyway, except a journal. And so the Lord worked it out. And it was just awesome because what happens is there's this giant kind of fortified bronze or whatever it's made of door. And at 7 o'clock, you're kind of gathered there in the main area and they check off the list. Are you here? Okay, how many people do we have? And it was really a handful. I would say under 20 in the entire church. And so they have this big knocker on the door and they knock on the door, they close it, and it's done. It's locked. You're not going to be able to get out until 4 a.m. And they bring this ladder in. In fact, since Mark has the audio, let's take you inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre just for a moment. I want you to hear this Orthodox priest and the cantor. They're in the Crusaders' Chapel. So if you're driving, don't close your eyes, but if you can, just go there in your spirit. There's dim lights, the glow of the candles, the centuries of souls journeying to this place. On the side walls, there are Crusaders' crosses. That was how they made their mark, that they came, they saw, and they conquered in the name of the Lord. And in this environment, you are transported. Take a listen. It really was like a time machine going back through the ages. And it wasn't granted in the Marty McFly actual speed, but it was fast enough for me that it was dizzying and it was sensory overload. And I still do just feel shock and awe. And I also am really grateful, again, for the tradition that I embrace, which is my Catholic faith. I had a chance to talk to a theology professor about this a few days ago, just briefly. And he was saying that when he had gone, he was Protestant and really was turned off by the churches, the structures, and how elaborate they were. And we had shared about the Mark Twain film, the documentary on PBS where he went 150 years ago. And it was very similar to that experience, too, where Mark Twain said, all of this ornamentation and these tawdry candles and all this bronze and gold, it's too much. But in the context of understanding history, and I don't know much. I love history. I am passionate about history, but the more I learn, the less I realize I know. So I don't even in any way want to sound like I'm an expert, but the more that I do know and the more that I learn about my faith, it really is awe-inspiring that this is part of the heritage that we are knitted into, and it did take you back through the journey. I have a couple notes that I wanted to share with you. Some, though, I don't. You know, I didn't share on social media. I didn't talk about this on social media. Surprise, surprise. You know, I normally spill my guts about everything, but sometimes, you know, things are just so private that you can't really speak about them, and you didn't, you know, there's no need to. So one of the first things, I had my Bible, and I was just able to really go through the Gospels and look at the account of Holy Thursday, well, really starting back into Palm Sunday and going to Holy Thursday, going to Good Friday, going to Resurrection Sunday, and reading word for word. Luke 13:7 is, as I sat down and started writing, one thing that jumped out at me, though, and that was Jesus answered Peter in this case, and said to him, "What I am doing, you do not understand now, but you will understand later." And every now and then things happen and you sense the Lord is preparing you for something. And there was no question the way that everything unfolded that was what was happening. And I say it kind of reluctantly because, you know, the last time that happened was with my daughter Carolina, and then, you know, the following months finding out about her diagnosis and special needs and basically a lifelong pervasive diagnosis. And so it is kind of scary when you feel touched and, as Saint Mother Teresa would say, kissed by God, because you're thinking, oh man, you know you're going to need it. You're going to need that consolation, but also the Lord freely gives because he loves us. And that was something that definitely, you know, so often in our lives, we don't understand now, but we will understand later. John 15:23, Jesus said, "Whoever loves me will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we, the Trinity," that's what I wrote in parentheses, "will make our dwelling with him." And wanting to be a place that the Trinity will dwell, wanting to keep the Lord's word. As I sat at Golgotha, it's beyond what I can describe. So I know there is no chance that I will do it justice in terms of what I was feeling in my soul. The sufferings, the crosses, everything is there. Everything that has been, everything that will be, in terms of the crosses we bear, the suffering, the blood of the Lamb, the sacrifice of the cross. And so I was reflecting on the crucifixion of my Lord. And I just wrote a few things. I said, "He had a fever. The wounds he sustained during the scourging at the pillar had scabbed over. Then the tearing of his garments by the cruel guards had torn open his tender, ripped skin. I lay my hand on this altar. I touch the stone. It is the first altar with the living Lamb being sacrificed for humanity to see. I place my hand on the stone altar, the rock of Golgotha, and with it the hands of my children, my husband, my sisters in Christ, all who suffer or will suffer a grief that can only be vocalized through unutterable groans. Take these cries, give them to Jesus and Mary." I also said, you know, in the beginning, as I was sharing about my trip and trying to find Jesus, trying to find my beloved, where is he in the midst of all this? Is he in the Pentecostals? Is he in the Jews? Is he in the shepherds that I see as we're driving out, you know, on the mountains by the Dead Sea? And so this was kind of my takeaway there as I was sitting in the church that night. I said, he does. He leads. He's in all. He's in the cloud, the burning flame, by water, by the thorns of the tree, the wood of the cross, the mountains, Tabor, Sinai, the Mount of Temptation. Everywhere I go, Lord, I see you as my shepherd. Can I see him in my home in the distressing disguise of autism? Be with me there, Lord. And then one of the songs I was listening to was Audrey Assad, and the lyrics say, "Father of my soul, even unto death, I will love you. Lover of my soul, even unto death, with every breath, I will love you. In the darkest hour, in humiliation, I will wait for you. I am not forsaken. One thing I desire, to see you in your beauty. And before I had left, I had tweeted, Audrey, I don't use Twitter anymore. Obviously, I don't know the lingo, but I had tweeted Audrey Assad because I love her voice. And there are so many artists that I love. Rich Mullins, he's kind of my go-to, that when I would go on a trip like this, I kind of have like a pilgrimage soundtrack. But I was really drawn to Audrey Assad. And so I messaged and said, do you have a CD that you would recommend as I go to the Holy Land? And she gave me a few suggestions. The one that I ended up downloading was Inheritance, and I liked it because it has a lot of classic songs. Holy, 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 be thou my vision. How can I keep from singing? It is well with my soul. And I really recommend that one. And I think, I mean, I will for the rest of my life when I hear that music, will be transported. And if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that's kind of like my little trick. I have a beach soundtrack that I only listen to when I'm there at the beach. And I save it like the last piece of chocolate. So like on a really dreary day, I'll take one of those songs out and I'll listen like while I'm doing dishes or when I'm having a hard time. And there's no way that I could pretend to compare any sort of sensory overload with what my daughter deals with on a daily basis. But I got to be honest, in some ways, it's helped me appreciate it a little bit more, because as an introvert thrust into these situations, whether it's Christmas shopping and the craziness or being tossed about in these touristy places, I don't want to say touristy, in these holy places that have become touristy, I'll put it that way, where people are pushing and it's loud and they're trying to get in there, and yet you're trying to like maintain a sense of spiritual peace. These songs are really helpful. So even kind of in the middle of like when we were going down, there's this really crunched stairway that you go into when you're in Bethlehem at the Church of the Nativity. And people were kind of trying to get out of line and get in front. And so I just put my headphones on and I listen to this music, and it helps you, it helped me enter into what exactly was going on and tune everything else out. So that's kind of my one tip that I have found really helpful. And for that time that I was in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, that was definitely a vehicle that helped me contemplate. When I was able to go in and to sit at the tomb, I had all of my children's pictures, and I laid their pictures on the tomb and consecrated their lives. I know they have been already, but I prayed and prayed, friends. For 9 hours, I prayed. And as I told my friend Jen, I said, every drop of oil in my prayer jar has been expended. And I prayed for all of the Podbean patrons, all of the listeners to this podcast. I prayed for the spouses of my children. I prayed for our country. I prayed for those in hospitals and nursing homes and homeless shelters and those with are addicted to drugs and my children and so many people by name. So many were fervent in their need for a petition. And what an honor it is to lift up those like incense before the throne. And it really was a moving experience. And from early on, from Egeria on, and even before her, so many people went and pilgrimaged because these are recognized places of holiness. I guess as I conclude here, and I know I didn't even touch on so many aspects of the trip, but one of the takeaways that I recognized, especially that night when I was at the church and thinking, why in the world, Lord, would you allow me, who I don't deserve anything, why would you call me here with such favor, not just to the Holy Land? Because I think when you're in a place that's so foreign, you realize your own vulnerabilities and your own limitations. In my own world and in my environment, I might feel like I can do it all and I've got it all together. But when you go to a place like that, and I don't want to be, you know, dramatic, I'm really trying to play it cool and give you just a little peek of what was going on. But the truth is, the reality of my littleness, my limitations, my unworthiness came out in a very profound way as I was sitting there in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. There are a million, billion people holier than I am, better than I am, more worthy to be in that place than I would be. And so I really felt like, Lord, I am just this beggar in rags that's here that I don't deserve to be here. And one of the things that I learned in going to the Holy Land is I did a study about the Essenes. And the Essenes were a member of an ascetic Jewish sect, but so they kind of lived on the Dead Sea, Qumran. So these were where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. And there was even a story, I won't go on a rabbit trail there, that John the Baptist had spent time with the Essenes, very concerned with purification and purity, the purity baths, living to the letter of the law. And they had a lot of followers. There was even questions about if Jesus was an Essene, and that's been debunked in different ways by different scholars. But in studying those people and then thereby studying the Jews further, it gave me a new appreciation of the purification. Jesus, as a Jew, and Jews would never have then touched anything that would be impure or unclean, yet Jesus Christ touched a leper. He touched a woman with a hemorrhage. He touched a corpse, Lazarus. And that, when you think about it, is unlike anything that the world had ever seen from that kind of person in that kind of place. It, to me, was a heartening reminder that he touches all of us in our unworthiness and makes us new and loves us where we are. So for me, that was another powerful thing. And in so many beautiful moments, praying with our group in the tomb of Lazarus, going to the Garden of Gethsemane, and in particular also the pit, the sacred pit, the dungeon where Jesus was held in St. Peter Gallicantu, that church in Jerusalem. And it's located right on the eastern slope of Mount Zion. And you can actually look out and see Potter's Field, where Judas, it is believed by tradition, would have hanged himself. So, I mean, there's just so many things to share. I mean, I didn't want to really end on that note, but overall, just everything that I had hoped for and so much more came out with this trip. And so thank you for allowing me to share. I know that was a doozy. I know that was a long one. So thank you for taking the time to listen and share it. I don't know when and if the Lord allows, but if that's the only time I ever get there in my life, I am so thankful. And if you're ever on the fence thinking, I truly, truly, from the bottom of my heart, say, go for it, do it whenever, however you can, and the Lord allows. But also that reminder that he's with us everywhere. And he promised that to the end of the age. When we say the Our Father, when we call him by name, we know he is with us, and he is Emmanuel, God with us. And as we wrap up, boy, there's so much kind of housekeeping stuff that I have not had a chance to talk about and get to, but we're going to have to save that for our next episode. But I just want to say thank you to everybody who came out to the Choose Joy Luncheon. It was at Walsh University. Always so grateful for our friends at Walsh. They sponsor the Arise Retreat. They helped us with this luncheon, and we had amazing speakers. Linda Isaiah, who you know and love, and please, by the way, pray for her husband. She shared at her talk when she was inspiring the entire crowd that she's been through a lot over the last few weeks. In particular, her husband actually went into cardiac arrest. He was having dialysis. There was a blood clot. And to make a long story short, he's still recovering. Robin Swoboda, a really well-known fixture of Ohio. She is a Hall of Fame broadcaster, news anchor, TV show host, columnist, and she's so funny. So she spoke and told some great stories, also told some very candid stories about her own life and struggles. Lori Triplett, our music artist, and it was a full house. We had over 200 ladies, all of our vendors, many vendors, Andrea Cingarella, who was at the Arise Retreat, and so many others. So thank you for your support and your prayers, and if you came out. And now we are looking ahead to the Arise Retreat, and we are going to be offering a promotion. So we've got some spots left. Be on the lookout for some special incentives if you want to go when you don't have your ticket yet. Thank you again for joining me for this episode of Good Things Radio. Radio. And before we wrap up the show, I want to also thank you for supporting the Choose Joy devotional. It is now underway. You know, the last episode, the last show before the break, number 121, it was just about there at the release date. Now it's here, it's out. And I've heard from a group in Texas already. They're doing the study as part of their women's group. Men who are reading the book, which is awesome. That's the best news, because it is for guys as well. And as I look in the thesaurus, there really is kind of a limited number of words for thank you. So it just doesn't exist, the gratitude truly of my heart for not only the contributors with incredible stories who've taken the time to pour themselves over the scripture readings, the liturgical year, and one by one allow those scriptures to speak to them. And they're offering their stories to you through this book and to you for your yes in supporting this as well. So a big thank you. If you've received the book, if you've had a chance to look through and read it, would you consider leaving a review on Amazon? That helps others find the book as well and would mean a lot to us. And also a big thank you to everyone who came out to the Choose Joy Luncheon. A big, big thank you to my producer, as always, Mark Cumming from Cumming Home Studio, for his dynamic skills and quick work. He is a producer extraordinaire, and not only for this program, but a consultant for so many others. And he was our sound guy as well at the Choose Joy Luncheon. And the speakers and the music artists never sounded better. So thank you so much to Mark. If you have any production needs, check him out. It's cumminghomestudio.org. Thank you especially to all of our Podbean patrons who keep this show going and growing. May your Advent be blessed, friends. Until next week, peace and love.